در چه صورت نعمت ها میتونه ما رو به خدا گره بزنه، پل بشه، ما رو به خدا برسونه؟
How the blessings of Allah can get us closer to Allah. How the favors of Allah can be like a bridge between us and Allah. This happens when you use the blessings of Allah and you recognize from whom such blessings are sent down. Blessings are tied with Allah through giving thanks. Using blessings of Allah without thanking Him becomes an obstacle on the way of knowing Allah. In better words, without thanking Allah, the blessings do not get you closer to Allah.
خدا رحمت کنه مرحوم میرزا رحیم ارباب رو، ارباب اصفهانی که
The late Mirza Rahim Arbab, the famous Iranian mystic, used to clean the vegetables very much softly and with taking much care. When he was asked about spending so much time for cleaning the vegetables, he said, I fear that on the day of judgment I am asked by an unnoticed leaf of vegetables that why didn't you let me enter the body of a believer so that I get perfect too. This means that even a leaf of vegetables can get to higher degrees if it enters the body of a believer who is thankful to Allah. Thank you very much, dear listeners of Arab English Radio Kalab Islampesh, for listening to this episode of the program Ulama's Speech, which was the English translation of a short speech by Hujjatul Islam Ali. To find out more about this program, log on to our website parstoday.ir Kalab Islam page. We leave you in Allah's care and goodbye.
The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran Broadcasting. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily, round the clock, for listeners across the globe. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran can be heard by the internet, shortwave, FM, and satellites. Our listeners in the Indian subcontinent can listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran while shortwave, 31 meters, 9,650 kilohertz, every day, from 1520 to 1620 UTC. Also, our listeners in Southern Africa can tune in to the English service of the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran via shortwave, 25 meters, 11,880 kilohertz, every day, from 1920 to 2020 UTC. Our listeners in Tehran can also listen to our program via FM 91.5 MHz. You can also listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on IranSat or BAD 5 and IntelSat 39 and via the internet. Our internet address is parstoday.ir/en. now you can listen to Arabi English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details. Please send your correspondence to the English program, PO Box number 19395-6767, Tehran, Islamic Republic of Iran, or email us to englishradio@irib.ir. We would be very pleased to have your comments about our audio quality and other means. Thank you.
النقي means the pure, the immaculate, the clean. Al-Hadi means the guide. All the Imams came for guidance.
As-salamu alaykum ya ahla bayt al-nubuwa wa mawdha' al-risala wa mukhtalaf al-malaik.
Peace be upon the directors of right guidance, the lanterns in darkness, the patterns of piety.
This is Dialogue, an introduction into the most important dialogues and conversations of Imam Ali ibn Muhammad al-Hadi alayhi salam. Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. This is Dialogue. I'm your host Mahdi. Imam Ali ibn Muhammad al-Hadi alayhi salam was a pure source of wisdom and knowledge. Despite his young age, he showed what divinely gifted knowledge really looks like. Imam al-Hadi alayhi salam was the direct descendant of the Messenger of Allah, peace and blessings upon him and his holy household. Imam al-Hadi alayhi salam was also the 10th divinely appointed Imam, and he was the 10th divinely appointed successor of the Messenger of Allah, peace and blessings upon him. Imam al-Hadi alayhi salam was also the son of the 9th divinely appointed Imam, Imam Muhammad ibn Ali al-Jawad alayhi salam. After Imam al-Hadi alayhi salam answered with the answers of an expert the most difficult of questions posed to him by the Shia scholars and jurisprudents, the Shia leaders at that time had more faith and certainty now of what they had previously believed, that a divinely appointed Imam must have the most knowledge, and he must be the most knowledgeable one of his time, regardless of whether he is young or old. And so the knowledge, virtue, and the delving into the sciences of the Holy Quran and the Sunnah of Imam al-Hadi alayhi salam astonished the minds and sparked meetings and gatherings in all parts of the Muslim world. At this moment, we invite you to listen to parts of the Arabic text of Ziyarat Jamiatul Kabira by Imam Hadi alayhi salam, along with its English translation. Please stay tuned.
Bismillahir Rahmanir Rahim. As-salamu ala a'immatil huda wa masabih at-tuja wa a'lam at-tuqa wa dawin nuha.
In the name of Allah, the Most Compassionate, the Most Merciful. Peace be upon the directors of right guidance, the lanterns in darkness, the patterns of piety, the owners of understanding, the endued with thoughts, the havens of the peoples, the inheritors of the prophets, the perfect specimen, the most excellent call in the arguments of Allah against the inhabitants of the world, the hereafter and the former world. Allah's mercy and blessings to be upon you all.
ورحمه الله.
Peace be upon the exponents of the recognition of Allah, the centers of Allah's blessing, the essence of Allah's wisdom, the keepers of Allah's secrets, the bearers of Allah's book, the successor of Allah's prophet, and the progeny of Allah's messenger. May Allah send blessings upon him and his household. Allah's mercy and blessings too be upon them.
وَرَحْمَةُ وَبَرَكَاتُ.
IRIB English Radio. Our website is parstoday.ir.
You can email us at englishradio@irib.ir.
Welcome back, dear listeners. It's an honor and a blessing to have you with us. You're listening to Dialogue on IRIB English Radio. So, dear friends, we are talking about the dialogues of Imam al-Hadi, alayhi salam, the 10th divinely appointed Imam. So, as we've been going, you know, slowly but surely and steadily through this very long conversation, this long dialogue of Imam al-Hadi, alayhi salam, which deals with one of the fundamental matters of confusion amongst the Muslims, not only in that era 1,000 years ago, but even in the present day, sometimes, you know, people have some trouble with this concept and they, you know, don't really realize what exactly is going on when it comes to compulsion and free will. Now, we again encourage the listeners to go ahead and go through the previous program so that you understand this idea and this question about whether it is absolute compulsion or absolute free will. Regardless, we have reached this place where we have been provided with enough proofs and evidences from Imam al-Hadi alayhi salam in this conversation, where His Eminence is saying that it is a matter between these two matters. It is neither absolute compulsion, nor is it absolute free will. Now, at this point in the conversation, after all of these different stages have been set, you know, and these different proofs have been provided and these evidences against the listeners, should definitely go and listen to these episodes. We come to a point where Imam al-Hadi alayhi salam now starts to specifically talk about each one of them, right? He was setting the stage up to this point, and at this point of the conversation, Imam al-Hadi alayhi salam says, "As for compulsion, it is the belief of those who claim that Allah forces people into committing sins and disobedience. And after Allah has forced people, compulsion, into committing sins and disobeying Him, then Allah punishes those individuals for that." Imam al-Hadi says, "Whoever believes in this concept has done an injustice against Allah. They have committed a wrong against Allah. They have falsified Allah Himself, and they have denied Allah's saying in the Holy Quran." Now, before we get into the verses of the Holy Quran, of course, Imam al-Hadi alayhi salam, in the previous programs we explained this, has said that the Holy Quran is the book which is the clear evidence for the believers. Of course, you have to have this comprehensive knowledge of the book of the Holy Quran in order to be able to come up with the correct understanding and the correct ma'arif and the correct teachings of Islam. So here, Imam al-Hadi alayhi salam, he starts to talk about the different verses of the Quran. And of course, he has said that one who believes in absolute compulsion, jabr, says that Allah forces people into committing sins and then punishes them, and that this is definitely something that is an injustice. But the Holy Quran says, "And your Lord Allah does not deal unjustly with anyone." And then in another place, the Holy Quran says, "This is due to what your own two hands have sent before," meaning the sins that you committed, And on the day of judgment, it will be said to these people who committed sins that this is what your hands have sent before. Allah is not in the least unjust to the servants. And another verse of the Holy Quran where Allah says, surely Allah does not do any injustice to men, but men are unjust to themselves. And so again, an individual, Imam Hadi alayhi salam says, who claims that they have been forced into disobedience, they have ascribed their sins to Allah, and in this manner they have considered Allah unjust, and Allah does not have the right to punish somebody which he has forced them to do so. And so Imam Al-Hadi alayhi salam, in conclusion, he says that this kind of an individual, he considers Allah as unjust and denies the Holy Quran, and whoever denies the Holy Quran is an unbeliever, and they are an unbeliever due to the consensus and the ijma of the whole Muslim ummah. This is Dialogue, Imam Al-Hadi alayhi salam. Thank you very much, dear listeners, for listening to this episode of Dialogue. Don't forget to visit our website at parstoday.ir/en Call of Islam page, where you can find all of our previous programs and many other great programs as well. Until another episode, fi amanillah, and God bless you all.
Face to face. Hello and welcome to another edition of Face to Face. I'm Mahdi Abbasian. Today in the studio, we are joined by one of the members of the political bureau of the Hamas resistance movement, Mr. Osama Hamdan. Welcome to the program.
Thank you very much.
Mr. Hamdan, the Al-Aqsa flood was a powerful, unexpected blow to the Israeli occupation. But did you anticipate the Israeli response to be this much brutal and heinous?
There is no doubt that Operation Al-Aqsa Flood represented a success for the resistance movement, a success in carrying out a large-scale operation without the enemy being able to take action preemptively. This operation succeeded in seizing the entire Gaza positions within just hours. This is undoubtedly a great achievement, but here's the question. Was there any expectation for the enemy's reaction? Certainly. It was expected that there would be a reaction, but it is the nature of the occupation. It kills you, seizes your land, arrests you, and imprisons you. For example, in the West Bank in 2022, before the operations, the number of martyrs was about 500. The number of wounded people who were taken to hospitals exceeded 3,000. We are talking about thousands of prisoners. Under this occupation for 75 years, you have two choices. Either you do nothing and it continues to kill you, capture you, and seize your land, or you resist and the enemy will continue the aggression. But the message will be conveyed that the Palestinian people are still adhering to their right to resist, that the enemy is paying a price for the occupation, and that in the end, this enemy will be forced to leave your land. Therefore, when you always choose resistance and you anticipate the scale of aggression and the enemy's reaction, you are convinced that this is the path that will lead to liberation.
With all the killing, destruction in Gaza, backed by the West, especially the United States, how do you plan to rebuild your popularity and also lay foundations for a new phase?
First, we start with the fact that the United States of America does not just support Israel. The United States of America is a partner in crime, a partner in genocide. It may appear to support Israel politically, but In practice, it provides ammunition, equipment, and weapons to the Zionist entity. It also employs all technological facilities in discovering tunnels and thus serves as pillars of Zionism. It is a full partner in the crime against the Palestinian people. On the other hand, when we talk about our popularity, we are not worried about it because historically the Palestinian people have always been the ones who choose resistance, and the popularity of resistance always rises. 2 months ago, various opinion polling institutions conducted an opinion poll about the popularity of the Palestinian Authority. Hamas is popular in Gaza, which was not so before the operation. Before the war, Hamas's popularity ranged between 40 to 45%. After the operation, its popularity rose. The Palestinian people saw that the resistance movement has been fighting this army for days, an army that boasted about its invincibility. People began to feel that the chances of liberation were higher than ever before. So Hamas's popularity rose. This gives us additional responsibility. How do we deal with this popularity and what serves the interest of our people to achieve national success? There is no doubt that this is a great responsibility.
Definitely it is. Now, there are propositions suggesting that Hamas is being coerced into relinquishing its leadership role in Gaza post-war amidst American and possibly Arab support, now leading to a transition to the Palestinian Authority. Now, what is Hamas's stance on these propositions, and how do you plan to particularly thwart them?
يعني دعني أوضح أولا أن حماس لم تكن يوما متمسكة بأن تكون هي السلطة الحاكمة.
Firstly, it is clear that Hamas was never committed to being the ruling authority. We have always adhered to a specific principle that the Palestinian people are the ones who elect and who choose their leadership through free elections. The leadership must present a program to the people that hold it accountable. Our program is clear. We resist for liberation. We won the election in 2006 and served this platform. America cannot change this fact, and we do not accept its interference in our internal affairs. We have informed all Arab countries that their interference over the Palestinian people is rejected. Whoever decides the next day in Gaza or the Palestinian people alone. This is the first part. The second part, we met with all the Palestinian factions and an agreement was reached on basic issues, including the formation of a transitional Palestinian government after the war in which all the factions are represented and have their authority to hold elections and begin the reconstruction process. Therefore, we are not concerned about the future of the leadership of the Palestinian people as much as we are keen for the leadership to be the one that has the option of resistance and believes in the complete liberation of Palestine.
The next question is, your objective with Operation Al-Aqsa was to shed light on the plight of Palestinian prisoners in Israeli jails, yet the occupation has added around 10,000 new prisoners. Does Hamas still prioritize shedding light on prisoners, or is it the priority now to reach a ceasefire and to get humanitarian aid into Gaza?
Let me clarify here that the issue of prisoners was just part of the objectives of the operation and was not the primary objective of it. The main goal of the operation was to confront the project of the Netanyahu government, which announced that it would end the Palestinian issue within the next 4 years. He developed a program to seize Al-Quds and transfer ownership of real estate from the Palestinians to the Zionists, seizing the maximum level, building more settlements in the West Bank, and developed a program to bring in 1 million new settlers from outside of Palestine, Jews from all over the world, and decided to begin the process of rebuilding his relations in the region, with American support, to form a situation in which Israel appears to be a natural entity. The operation came to say that Palestine is still under occupation. The Palestinian people are still resistant. We want to liberate our land, and this is what happened. One of the results of the operation is that the prisoners will be transferred. One of the results of the operation is that the siege on the Palestinian people ends. But the essence of the process is to put the Palestinian issue on the right path.
Great. Now, if a ceasefire is agreed upon, what kind of a guarantee can there be that ensures the U.S. will comply with the terms, or the Israeli regime for that matter, especially if and when all the captives are released? Because we know when it comes to Israelis, they are not very good with being committed to their oaths and their commitments.
I agree with you that the Israelis do not abide by agreements and covenants. Their history of this is very bad. Therefore, the real guarantee is the resistance's ability to continue the confrontation with the occupation. The real guarantee is the ability of the Palestinian people to withstand. The real guarantee that we won in Operation Al-Aqsa Flood is that the Israelis and Americans began to realize that the resistance axis is capable of applying pressure to support the resistance in Gaza and is capable of having an effective influence on the political positions in favor of the resistance. Therefore, when you make an agreement, you bet on the power cards you hold, that they are the ones that can be a true guarantor of the agreement that was concluded. The occupation will try to evade or deceive, but we will also try, through the power cards we possess, to make it as disciplined as possible.
And Mr. Hamdan, speaking of negotiations and ceasefire talks, why did Hamas withdraw from the Cairo negotiations? Does the delay harm Palestinians more or the occupation?
The truth is that we did not withdraw from the Cairo negotiations. What happened was that after the Paris meeting, a proposal was presented to Hamas regarding a ceasefire and some details. This proposal was also presented to the occupation side. For us, we responded to the proposal. We proposed some modifications to it and developed our vision to improve the proposal. On the Israeli side, the mediators were surprised because Israel, which had expressed its approval of the Paris proposal, retracted parts of it. Therefore, the mediators began trying to bring Israel back to the Paris proposal. We must wait for the reaction of the mediators with the Zionist entity. From our side, there was a clear statement by our brother Ismail Haniyeh, head of the Political Bureau, that we deal positively with ideas that we are keen to stop the aggression, provide relief to our people and the people of the siege, and the start of reconstruction process. In exchange for all of this, we will go to the prisoner exchange process, and therefore we have clearly defined our position. We are waiting for the enemy to have a positive position. The ball is in their court and the mediator's court. We have not backed down. As long as we are negotiating, we go on with it, and as long as the fight goes on, we fight.
Mr. Hamdan, how can Hamas utilize internal pressure on Netanyahu by emphasizing the urgency of releasing prisoners in Gaza, by highlighting the significance of this issue within Israeli society and among political stakeholders? This heightened pressure may compel him to seek a ceasefire deal that aligns with Hamas's terms in order to de-escalate tensions and address the issue of prisoners effectively.
There is no doubt that in the negotiation process, you make every effort to put pressure on the enemy. One of the tools of pressure, which you also mentioned, is to the prisoner swap, what these prisoners are suffering from, and the killing that occurred to some families as a result of the Israeli Air Force's bombing of some sites. Also, some of the prisoners were killed directly by the occupation army, as happening with three soldiers who were captured by the resistance, and then the group that captured them was martyred. When they escaped, the army killed them despite identifying them. This puts great pressure on Netanyahu, but the resistance also has other tools to put pressure on Netanyahu. One of them is the resistance's unrelenting firing of rockets at some cities and regions occupied in 1948. The continuation of the resistance action on the battlefield against the occupation is putting pressure on Israel, because every day there are more deaths among the occupation soldiers and more losses among the files and ranks of the army. Just for the army, the destruction of 1,000 military vehicles out of about 4,000 military vehicles in the ground forces is very heavy. This is all a lot of pressure on Netanyahu. An important addition that should be noted is the action of the resistance in southern Lebanon, or what the Ansar Allah resistance is doing in Yemen, or the resistance in Iraq. This created pressure on the Zionist entity and also on the United States, which does not want the confrontation to expand in the region because it still believes that it can rearrange the region. The expansion of the confrontation will cause the Americans to lose control in the region, and the region will go on paths that will not necessarily be in the interest of the Americans, but rather will be in the interest of the people of the region. And this is what the Americans fear. These are all pressure cards on Netanyahu, and I believe this is the secret of the American insistence on reaching a solution that leads to a ceasefire.
Now, something about a ceasefire. Right now, the situation in Rafah. Netanyahu threatens to invade Rafah, even if a ceasefire agreement is reached. How can Hamas, you know, restrain Netanyahu's recklessness in his military options in Gaza?
When Netanyahu threatens to invade Rafah, he is seeking two purposes. The first goal is to create pressure on the resistance to give up some of its demands in the negotiations. The second one is to try to put pressure on the mediators, otherwise things will deteriorate further. We said to the mediators that any move Netanyahu makes to attack Rafah will be faced by the resistance, but it will also make Netanyahu involved in a genocide massacre. And everyone knows that the International Court of Justice issued a preliminary ruling and set conditions for it. If Netanyahu is involved in a military operation towards Rafah, this will confirm that what he is doing is genocide, and this means that he is committing a crime against humanity, and this will have repercussions not only for him, but also on the American administration, which I mentioned a little while ago that it is an accomplice in this crime. That's why we're applying confrontational pressure. I think that Netanyahu is hesitant about the Grand Operation, but if he decides to do so, things will not be easy for his army.
Now, the world sympathizes greatly with the Palestinian people, but Israelis are attempting to influence global attention. For example, by Israeli president presentation of a book titled The End of the Jews to convince the world that Hamas seeks to annihilate the Jewish population. Now, how do you respond to such displays, especially in a significant security conference like the Munich conference?
I must clarify an issue by which the Israelis and the United States are trying to put pressure on us. We do not fight the Israelis because they are Jews. We are fighting them because they are occupiers of our land. Meaning if they leave our land, we will not pursue them and we will not fight them. Our battle has a political dimension that has nothing to do with the fact that they are Jews and believe in Judaism, and has nothing to do with the fact that they came to Palestine or are present in other places. The real problem is that they occupied our land. The Jewish problem as a religious one is not related to our country. Rather, the Jewish problem began in Europe. They were expelled from Britain in the 16th century, and for 200 years, Jews were banned from entering. In France, they were prevented from exercising their religious rights from 1400 AD until 1808. In Spain, they were expelled and prevented from exercising their religious rights until 1982. In Germany, we know what happened. Every time the Jews fled this persecution, they came to our Muslim country. And you know that there are Jews in all Muslim countries who live in safety. The problem rose when they decided to become an occupying force, usurp our rights, and kill our people, which prompted us to resist them. Therefore, when the Zionist chief of staff talks about the end of the Jews, he is lying and trying to make excuses for a story that we did not create and was created by the Nazis. I think the answer to it is very simple. The Zionist media published pictures of him signing the missiles that were fired to kill our people, women and children. Therefore, I hope that he changes the title of his book to say, "The End of the Occupation." Yes, the occupation will end, and we as Muslims will certainly be able to end it. This is our religion, to embrace all people of other religions. As Palestinians, we have Muslims and Christians. No one has ever talked about a crisis between Muslims and Christians in Palestine. Rather, we lived as one nation. Therefore, yes, the occupation will end, but not on the basis that the head of the Zionist entity or the Zionist propaganda speaks about. They want to make us appear as brutal people.
Thank you. That was a very thorough explanation of the conflict between Palestinians and the Israeli regime. Now, let's talk about what's going to happen after the genocidal war in Gaza. How do you envision the end of this onslaught and now entering its fifth month without a clear ceasefire on the horizon?
لا شك أن الاحتلال أعلن عن أهداف للعملية العسكرية التي يقوم بها.
There is no doubt that the occupation announced the goals of its military operation. They announced that they want to destroy the resistance of Hamas. They want to destroy Hamas, meaning the resistance. They announced that they wanted to free the prisoners from the hands of the resistance. They announced that they wanted to form an administration for the Gaza Strip, an administration linked to the regime. After about 5 months, what happened? They failed to eliminate the resistance. The resistance on the battlefield is still fighting. Every day there are losses among the occupation army, dead and wounded. They are still held captive by the resistance. The enemy was unable to free anyone alive except for what took place according to the exchange we agreed upon. They failed in trying to create a situation in which an administration in Gaza works with the occupation. They once spoke about clans and families, and the families issued a statement saying that they were biased towards the resistance. They tried to talk about a civil administration to be imposed on the Palestinian people. The Palestinians announced that they would deal with it as agents of the regime. Therefore, they failed in all of their goals. They had only one thing left, and that was the attack on Rafah. Its results will also be a failure. The enemy will realize at some point that it is unable to succeed. The Americans realize this issue and therefore are trying to persuade the Israelis to accept a ceasefire. The regional countries that accepted the Israeli aggression began to realize that the resistance's victory would not serve the interest of the Zionists. Therefore, I believe that the chances of reaching a ceasefire agreement, even if they do not seem high so far, are now present, and we will do our best to achieve it as quickly as possible, God willing.
And Mr. Hamdan, you already mentioned the support for the Palestinian resistance by the Iraqi resistance, the resistance in Yemen and Lebanon. Now, I want to ask you, how does Hamas evaluate this support for Palestinians in the Gaza Strip? Have they, you know, slowed down the pace of the onslaught in Gaza or exerted significant pressure on Israel and Americans that support them or are complicit in their crimes to impose certain options on Netanyahu?
I think there were two impacts. There is a direct impact and there is a strategic impact. The direct impact of the Resistance Act in Lebanon forced the occupation regime to keep parts of the army in northern Palestine. This means that if this confrontation had not occurred, this entire army would have launched an aggression against Gaza. And therefore, the Israeli army's ability to confront it in Gaza would have been exhausted. Also, the resistance in Lebanon succeeded in inflicting real losses and casualties on the occupation army, and the occupation army began to feel that it might fall into additional trouble if this aggression continued. The resistance in Yemen succeeded in sending a clear message. A siege on the Palestinian people means a siege on the Zionist entity. The American administration did not succeed in dealing with the matter despite its aggression against Yemen. It has been proven that this aggression did not lead to any cessation of the resistance in Yemen, represented by our brothers in Ansarullah. In Iraq, the American administration thought that the Iraqi people, after everything they had gone through and suffered from the American occupation and the injustice they suffered, might not care about issues like the Palestinian issue. The Americans were surprised that the Iraqi people began their resistance to confirm that they were with Palestine, and thus the Americans seemed to realize that they were losing and that their losses would be reflected in Israel. Strategically, I believe that the resistance action in Lebanon, Yemen, and Iraq achieved two goals. The first is that it sent a message that the resistance in the region is cohesive and works together in its own way and not according to what others want. Its method is effective. The second issue is that this axis has a firm, principled position and is using its capabilities in an intelligent and wise manner and is capable of achieving results. This means that the future of the region will not be according to what the United States of America or the Zionist entity wants. Rather, we are approaching a stage that the future of the region will be according to what the people of the region want. Therefore, I believe that what was achieved strategically and momentarily was important.
Okay, and the next thing I want to ask you, Mr. Hamdan, is about reports that suggest that Hamas political bureau chief Ismail Haniyeh and leader of Hamas in the Gaza Strip have lost contact. What is the situation now between the two? Has contact been reestablished? Or the other thing that I want to know, is there a disagreement between the two when it comes to a ceasefire?
Let me answer the second question, which is the consensus on a ceasefire. There is agreement on all the basic issues, whether between Brother Ismail Haniyeh, Brother Yahya Sinwar, or even within the political bureau of the movement. Most of the talk about internal division is rumors spread by the Zionist occupation forces, the psychological warfare organization in the occupation army, whose goal is to weaken the Palestinian front so as to make it appear as if there's a division within the resistance to affect our people or to make us comment and say that unity exists or that there is a certain thing going on which may lead to providing information to the Zionist entity that will help it reach the leadership of the resistance in Gaza. We say that the leadership decisions are made through the contribution of all members without exception. Its decisions enjoy the support of all leaders of the movements in their various positions. Rather, I go further and say that we do not take these decisions, especially regarding the ceasefire, except after consulting with our brothers in the Islamic Jihad movement and in the other resistance factions, because they are also partners in sacrifice. They are our blood partners. We cannot take a decision without consulting them all.
And my final question, Mr. Hamdan, the Israeli regime is pushing ahead with its plans to invade Rafah, the southern Gaza Strip, claiming that the Israeli forces have dismantled Hamas in the northern and central Gaza. And they say Rafah and the southern Gaza Strip is the final, you know, place for Hamas resistance fighters. First of all, to what extent do you confirm these claims? And what is your message to the Israeli regime?
لا شك الإسرائيلي يحاول أن يروج أنه
نجح في القضاء على المقاومة.
There is no doubt that Israel is trying to promote that it has succeeded in eliminating the resistance in the northern and central Gaza Strip. But daily facts reveal that it is lying. For example, 2 days ago, rockets were launched from the north of the Gaza Strip and from the center of the Gaza Strip, hitting cities in the Palestinian territories occupied in 1948. Israel itself announces that there have been deaths in its army in areas in the north and center, as well as the south. Now it is trying to provide justification for the attack on Rafah to create an image of victory. Therefore, we say that this lie told by the occupation cannot affect us. Israel may attack Rafah. If it does so, our message to them is simple. Rafah will only be a story of pain, suffering, and loss to the occupying army. God willing, it will be a story of heroism, victory, and sacrifice for our people and our resistance. The occupation regime will emerge more defeated and humiliated from the Battle of Rafah than what happened to it in the north-central Gaza Strip.
Thank you so much, Dr. Osama Hamdan, member of the political bureau of Hamas resistance movement. Goodbye.
This is Back to Reality.
Back to Reality.
It's the show where we discuss the most topical of topics, the most controversial of controversies, and the most important affairs of affairs.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Assalamu alaikum, lovely friends from all around the world. Welcome back to a new episode of Back to Reality. This is Arab English Radio. Once more, I have the honor to be your host. This is Asma, and here with me I have two very dear guests. Sister Bita.
Yeah.
And Zahra.
And Sister Zahra. Well, assalamu alaikum, both of you.
Alaikum assalam, dear.
And you know the ritual. You have to introduce yourself very much briefly. Tell us about your background and let us know you more.
I'm Zahra and I'm a computer science student. I also attend HOSA and have finished my second stage studies in HOSA and I'm completing my degree in computer science.
So that's very good. Wish you best of luck.
Computer science and your literature. And
what a combination.
Beautiful combination.
Yeah.
And I'm Bita, by the way, and it's a pleasure for me to be here again. I'm studying medical science, and that's it.
Yeah, thank you for being
You're
here,
welcome.
Both of you. Well, once more, I have the pleasure to sit here with these very dear guests. So there are some friends of mine who, when they gather together, they start just talking, giving notions. And
backbiting, gossiping.
Okay, yeah. Well, let's not put it that harsh way. We're just giving information to each other.
Yeah,
there was
yeah,
a play
sure.
that we were reading it, which was so interesting and funny. And I recommend everyone to go and read it because that's so interesting and that's so applicable to our real life nowadays. Which was a school for scandal. And there was this woman out there whom she always started a gossip in different communities. And then what she said as a justification, whenever anybody accused her of gossiping, she said, "I am not gossiping. I'm just reporting what I have heard." So under this notion and under this pretext, we always do things that we shouldn't do. Because whatever we say might destroy the reputation of a person or even maybe the destiny of a person.
Mm-hmm.
So it's very difficult to listen to different reports and not get affected.
Yeah, because as much as you would like to tell people to not gossip and not talk behind people's backs and not say bad things about them, there are always people who will. And the question comes that, well, when you hear these things, what are you going to do about it?
Exactly.
Are you going to like go be like, "Oh my God, that person, yeah. I know they like
yeah.
last night binged on
because
a
we have
bottle
some
of ice
side
cream.
Notes as well, you know,
yeah.
because
yeah.
we already have got some other reports. So when you
yeah.
add it to the reports given to you, it would create such a beautiful story.
Yeah.
So it's so hard to control it.
Yeah, definitely. And other than the fact of whether it is even true or false, the influence it has on ourselves and how we interact with that person later on
exactly.
shows itself yeah, like a
because
lot.
Because it would lead to judgments, and mostly these judgments are not going to be good judgments.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, the thing is, it's fun. We are sitting yeah, in a group of friends.
Naturally.
Yeah,
and
talking about other
speaking,
people.
It's fun.
Look at that woman. She's wearing this red dress. It's so flashy. Oh my gosh. What a personality
it's
she
not
has.
Just like that.
Yeah. You know?
Vita, you have been at university. But it doesn't end in that point.
Exactly.
You know? In some occasions, you, as I just told you, you have some side notes. The other person is adding something. If you put that puzzle together, you will get somewhere.
Yeah.
So exactly there, the story gets so interesting and funny. That's the suspense, but you have to deal with it.
Yeah.
You have to make a decision whether yeah. you want to be involved in that gossip. And that is scandal or not?
Yeah, there are so many other domains and other circumstances that we can refer to as an example of this thing that will happen. Not only among women, because mostly we have this kind of
accusation
of women that they talk a lot. But I saw this with my own two eyes, specifically in my university, that even boys talk about each other a lot, specifically even whenever they are working.
Yeah.
Whenever they, yeah. And it's not about not
gender.
About gender. Or not even generation or no other factor that
there's no
we may
limit.
Be judgmental.
Yeah. Everybody is interested
Everybody.
In gossiping. Everybody is interested.
Everybody
is prone
wants to know
that.
What's going on.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's the point.
As they say, they want to know the tea.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And the point here is to control this desire in order to talk about
and
other
another
people
important point
and be judgmental.
Is actually to control your judgments.
Yeah.
Which we're going to talk about more after the break. Reality, you're listening to. Well, this is Asma. Sister Bita and Sister Zahra are helping us with the topic, which is related to gossiping, which is related to listening but not judging other people. But is it possible to listen but not be affected and not passing any judgment on people?
I think it's very difficult if you have heard something,
yeah.
especially in the form of gossip, because people don't come and gossip and be like, you don't know that girl yesterday. She went and she exercised for 30 minutes. She drank all the water she needs for the day. She
yeah.
ate all her healthy
it's
food.
Not those
they're
big
like,
things.
No, they're like, you won't believe what she did the other day. So it's always juicy, kind of usually negative material.
And fishy, smelly.
Yeah, yeah
like
exactly.
stuff you can be like, oh, no
yeah, exactly.
way. Is that what she meant? And so it's pretty much, I would say, almost impossible.
If you have a kind of impression about people
yeah.
whenever you face them at a first meeting, okay, you cannot stop your feeling about the way they speak, the way they talk to you.
But we don't let that get in the
yeah,
middle of our
yeah,
judgment.
Exactly.
I mean, we give them some opportunities to defend themselves.
Yeah, and this is the point. This is the
yeah.
whole point, to let them show their true color, show their true self, show their true personality, and it takes time.
I guess adding on to what Sister Bita said, you can't control your emotions.
Yeah.
But you can control what you do about them.
Exactly.
You can't control,
nice.
Like, if you feel bad or if you feel kind of, like, you know, unpleasant or, like, angry at somebody. But you can control, like, how you treat them.
Like I'm going to give you an example of a situation. Like, for example, imagine you're a boss.
Yeah.
A person is coming to you as an interviewer. Before you know about this interviewer, previously, you have heard something about them. You didn't know that they would come as an interviewer to you. But then now you have a background about them. Would that background affect their ability, their talent as an interviewer?
So that would be really difficult. Like, somebody would have to over there be like, okay, if it's my responsibility to... Oh, in this position, it's my responsibility
yeah.
to judge people.
Exactly. And I'm not here to have a morality check.
Yeah, yeah.
It's just a work.
And only judge, only like decide, basically.
Yeah.
I guess more than judging, decide based on a series of, as our sister
yeah.
said, criteria that does this person fit the criteria I need for over here? So obviously what they've heard from before can be a basis to, you know, like, watch out. Like, they're like, okay, I've heard from somebody that this person doesn't complete their work on time. Then that would be something for them to watch out for, to exactly. ask for, but not default treat the person like a criminal because of something heard from somebody else that, exactly. well, because I know you're lazy and you don't complete your work on time, I'm going to put like 50 more restrictions on you.
As a doctor, one of the biggest things that we try to maintain is to not have any feelings about people exactly. whenever we see them, according to the way that they are wearing their clothes and whatever, because there are so many different levels of people, different social status that came to the doctor. I mean, there is no boundary here.
Yeah.
You may face a kind of poor, homeless person.
So what should you do?
The only thing that we try to maintain is that it's okay to have feelings about patients. It's okay to have impressions about people.
But you shouldn't let it come in the middle of your
exactly.
diagnosis.
And not only your diagnosis, the way you treat that patient, you have to be fair. Mm. And because you are there in order to do that, this is your responsibility.
It's nice that in all majors we have something like that. Let's go for a break, and then we'd come up with the last part of today's episode, and then I would tell you about my major as well.
Yeah.
This is IRIB English Radio. You're listening to Back to Reality.
So, yes, we're talking about how to listen to things without being judgmental, and we don't let those things affect our judgments. In literature, we have intentional fallacy. I don't know if you have heard that or not, but then that's a nice notion. They say that if a critic would go for a work of art, but instead of going for the beauty of that work, for the elements inside that work, you go and search in the biography of the author, or things related to the external world, then you are going to get into the trap of intentional fallacy.
Yeah.
So the same thing is applicable to the real world. If we are going to judge someone based on their talents, we shouldn't dig deeper in the things we know already or in the predetermined notions that we have.
Especially if it has nothing to do with us.
Exactly.
Like, you know, at some point, maybe you're like a parent, you're trying to fix something, you're a teacher, you're a psychologist, you're a employer.
Yeah.
In a certain area, not even in everything, in a certain set of like skills, behaviors, it's important for you to learn about these things, especially like, for example, in marriage, like all of those things get covered over there. But if you're just like, you know, just a random stranger, it's none of your business to like go and try to figure out, you know, that lady who's walking over there, where is she going? Who is she trying
exactly.
to meet? Does she, you know?
Like, try to practice not being so nosy.
Yeah.
And don't put your nose where it doesn't belong, because it might lead to dangerous decisions.
Mm-hmm. If I'm correct, what you're talking about is the Islamic notion of inviting to good and forbidding from evil.
Yeah.
In this as well, we are prohibited from going and searching into people's private lives to
exactly.
figure out if they are doing an evil for us to, like, then go and prohibit them from it or not. And obviously, in a like in a public social perspective, somebody who's doing a public and social wrong deed, you are allowed as a member of society to, in its own level, with its own regulations and criteria, let somebody know that what they're doing is harmful
exactly,
to society. Another thing that our sister Bita mentioned was that, you know, you like to tell other people things because you want to attract attention. Like, you like saying something to someone because you want to hear that, wow. There are situations where you end up having to tell people, you know, like, this person did something, or that person said something. Like, there are situations where that happens. You have to tell a parent that, you know, your kid did that. Your, I don't know, your friend did that. Your, like, if it relates to somebody. And what's important is when you try to transfer that information, to not add your own judgment onto it. Like, don't be like,
Added she, spices to
yeah,
it.
Yeah, yeah. Like, don't go around and be like, she gave this gift to you because she meant to, like, you know, put you down for that other thing.
Now, we
you
all
did.
Know what you're talking about.
Yeah. And it usually ends up messing people's exactly. relationships up. Like, if you want to tell something and you need to tell something to somebody, tell it as it is. Don't add your own personal spice
exactly.
or judgment.
So even if
it.
You are going to be like that, do it as a man. So yeah. do it in the best and purest way possible. Don't add personal judgments on it. And do not add your criticism. Do not add your hatred toward that person to it. Do not exaggerate, even if you are doing that, which is not a good thing to do. So the best way to ignore all